Submergence es la producción germano-franco-española que inaugurará esta noche la 65ª edición del Festival de San Sebastián. Para presentarla en rueda de prensa contamos con la presencia de su director, Wim Wenders, de los intérpretes Alicia Vikander y Celine Jones y del autor de la novela en la que está basado el guión, Jonathan Ledgar. Vamos a dar comienzo inmediatamente ya al turno de preguntas. Si levantas la mano te ven.
Hola, buenos días. Buenas tardes. Una pregunta para Wim Wenders y otra para Alicia Vikander. Para el director, me ha gustado muchísimo la fotografía, sobre todo en la primera parte de la película. Esos paisajes que se veían, que parecían casi cuadros. Entonces, me gustaría saber si puede hablar un poco sobre esa parte de la película. Y para ella, pues lo que quería saber era cómo me ha gustado muchísimo la química con su compañero James McAvoy. Pues me gustaría saber cómo trabajó con él y cómo fue trabajar con él. Gracias.
So I give you time to think about it and answer.
I got it in Spanish. I never got it in English.
Ah, you have the wrong channel?
No, I had it on. There was.
Yes, I'm on.
Channel 3. Channel 3.
Hi. I think
give
I got
the question
some.
Again.
My Spanish is quite good. Okay, great. Thank you.
So now, landscapes first. Places. In a film that is taking place basically all over the planet, it's important that the places that you choose represent it well. And the most important place in the novel by Jonathan was this amazing hotel by the Atlantic Ocean. For that, we looked from the coast of Galicia up to Norway along the entire Atlantic coast because I wanted to have a very special spiritual place. But every hotel we saw, and we saw hundreds, none of them was really what I was hoping for. And we finally found a place that was not a hotel, but was built in 1900 as a meeting place, an interreligious meeting place by some Americans. And it served as a guest house. It had enough rooms and it looked like a hotel, so we made it a hotel. And the other places, of course, are gorgeous, like the Faroe Island, if you haven't been there. It's about time you go. And Africa, we shot some of it in Spain, in La Mancha, and some of it we shot in Djibouti, which was the closest we could get to Somalia, climate-wise, and also in terms of the culture and the aridity of the place. Thank you. Now to your more interesting question.
James. I was extremely, happy to be given the chance from Wim to work with James. I've seen his work, and I've admired what he's done in his career so far. I've always thought that he's very much a chameleon. I'm very impressed with the very different kind of roles that he takes on, but how extremely truthful and real he always feels. Then I think maybe if any of you journalists have met him in real life, he's a hoot. He's a very, very funny man.
We can confirm.
Yes. He's almost like the Joker in the game, which is lovely to see because it kind of lifts up any room and working space that you have. And then it's amazing to see as soon as the camera's rolling or you're in rehearsals, he is, one of the most devoted actors that I've seen. So, no, I loved it. I really enjoyed working with him. I miss him here today.
I think it was the greatest challenge. And when I read the script, I thought it's easy to shoot in Africa and it's easy to shoot all the other stuff under the water whatever, the only real difficulties, and we have to get that right, otherwise the film is no good, is the relationship between the two of them. So that for me was the biggest task, and I'm extremely happy that Alicia and James really played their hearts out and that their chemistry was so wonderful. Thank you.
Hola, buenas tardes. Quería preguntarle a Wim Wenders.
Where are you?
Hola. Por la antigüedad de este proyecto, con el yihadismo que se introduce, que se filtra en la historia de amor, el yihadismo que por desgracia golpea a Europa y es tema de conversación y de preocupación en este momento, ¿no?
Well, it was one of the things that was in the script, one of the main subjects of the script, as well as, of course, Jonathan's novel. And one of the things that attracted me to it was that it became a subject in the film and in the novel, and that it was taken seriously, and it was that it one could look at it without prejudice. And we had no intention when we made the film that it would be such an important subject in our days today. But going to Africa and shooting in Djibouti, as we couldn't shoot in Somalia, made me understand that some of the problem is definitely self-made by our own civilization, and that it goes way back, that it has a lot to do with a lack of balance on our planet between rich and poor, and that declaring war on terrorism in 2001 was about the best thing terrorism could hope to happen. And we really created this monster partly ourselves by declaring war to it, which is what they wanted and which is what upgraded them big time. So thank you.
John Hopewell from Variety. Hello. This is a question for Alicia Vikander. I thought it was very interesting in terms of your relationship with the James McAvoy character, that when it came to who decided who did what, whether it was when they met, what time they met, or who made the moves in the physical relationship, it was your character, not his. Did you find this at all strange, or have you noticed in these kind of scenes an evolution where a woman is allowed more and more to express her physical enjoyment of caressing a man rather than normally it's the other way around?
Huh. It's interesting because I didn't think about this as much as you seem to have thought about it, which is maybe, you know, maybe that's just because I think it, a young generation, that is kind of reality, and in the sense that it can be both ways. It's a personality, it's not gender, that's what I'm saying. And maybe, I think, over the last couple of years, when it comes to diversity in any way in films, I think that you'll finally start to show all the true stories. And maybe it's been in films up till now that, you know, like when I started, it feels like it's much more women who are, you know, directing or telling stories today, or diversity in front of the camera. And that just means that we get all the stories out there that should have been told and that I feel are true to the reality we live in.
I wonder if Mr. Wenders could comment on my question, if he was listening to the question once I said this is a question for Alicia Vikander.
Yes, I think I did listen and I was waiting for an answer. And you see, these are two very special characters with really dedication on their minds, and they're both willing to go to the limits of what they're able to do. And we soon understand she's a very serious scientist, and in this one conversation they have the day after their first night, we realize that normally she makes the choices with whom she goes to bed, but normally the next day she doesn't see that person anymore. And which I think was a very poignant scene. And
I also really found it interesting, you know, when I read the book and the script, that I find it quite rare that it's a romantic story that's really built up in a very intellectual way. I think in real life, a lot of people can relate to the fact that you can have a meeting or a connection with somebody, and maybe if it's in the beginning of when you actually got to know that person, it can almost be an after effect, that it's not until days or maybe weeks later that you actually realize what that impact had to you. Because I think we live very fast lives, and things kind of, you know, it's a certain momentum. And then it's almost like, I think with, you know, my character that I played, I think it's more that, you know, it's not that you met and you fell heels over, you know, in love, but later on, you know that it was a connection. It was a meeting and a, you know, a certain understanding, even though they're very different people, that made her realize that this man actually meant a lot more than what she maybe realized at the time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, Rodrigo Fonseca from Brazil, TV Globo Brasil. A couple of questions to Mr. Wim Wenders. First of all, thank you because you exist. Congratulations, thanks. We have an artist like you.
Thanks. I pass the thanks on to my mom.
The first question is, this movie is really respectful with silence. I want to understand the place of silence in your cinema. And the second question, we could define Submergence several ways, a spy movie, an ecological thriller, many ways, but it's a love story. What's the importance of love story in the world we live today?
When I read the amazing novel by Jonathan for the first time, I thought, wow, there is a lot of darkness on our planet, both the darkness on the bottom of the ocean, but also the darkness in the souls, the darkness that James has to deal with. And I figured I could not tell this darkness or even get near it if I couldn't counterbalance it. So I very much believe in Martin Luther King saying you cannot fight darkness with darkness, only light can fight it. So the love story really allowed not only me, but both of these characters to go so far, because their love is really carrying them through their two adventures, their separate adventures. And silence, yes, thank you. It's harder and harder to be able to do a silent moment in the film, because films today are basically wall-to-wall sound. And silence is something very precious today. And I think silence is great to also give value to, when it's not silent, to give value to dialogue, to music, to whatever sounds you have in the film. If you don't have silence, all the other sounds sort of are inflationary. So I think silence is an important medium. Thank you.
¿Qué tal, Alicia? Alicia, soy Gonzalo Hurtado de Perú. Mi pregunta es la siguiente. Tu personaje intenta explicar, digamos, la vida desde su punto de vista científico. Tal vez es un poco indiferente a la política, no tiene la visión que tiene su compañero. Yo quería saber, al momento de interpretar este personaje, ¿qué tantos puentes sentiste tú con ella o qué tanto sentiste que te diferenciaba también, ¿no?
I mean, the links, I guess, are, I think it is a very easy thing in any profession that you go in and repeat yourself or go very close to yourself. I think I, you know, always try to honor a character and try and step away from myself, but of course then I use my own emotions and my experiences as the tools to create an imagination. So in one way there's always a link there, I guess, but I admire her for being so extremely hardworking and passionate, and I learned a lot from her. I actually, stepping into this film, I had no idea what some of these scientists that we have and mathematicians are doing and what they're doing for us in our world. And I got the chance with, we did preparations and went out with the actual company, Ifremer, on their boat for a few days. And I thought I was gonna sit, you know, meeting these scientists, a lot of fantastic women who became great inspiration for me for this part. And I thought I was not gonna be able to understand anything. I almost excused myself walking into the room. And instead, they just took me on this journey of seeing, like it's mentioned in the film, it's really a whole world underneath our own world. And to get to see all the creatures and the living things and the fact that, it's not photosynthetic. Exactly, chemosynthetic. You know, to kind of get an insight into all these things made me, you know, pick up several books and learn a lot. And in that sense, I'm very happy that she invited me into a new world.
The actual woman was called Marianne. She actually does the job of a biomathematician, and she did this exposition that Dani, as the character, did for the first time in the film. She did it several times. And Marianne actually saw the film before it was finished, and she realized we needed a very special kind of shot of these smoking chimneys, the black smokers. And she went down one more time, and she said, this time I'm going to get you the shots that you need. And she filmed those black smokers that are now in the film. So glory to Marianne, the unknown, real Dani.
Yes, here I am. Mr. Wenders?
Where are you?
Yes. First thing, I wanted to come back on the first statement you made about location. I just find it hard to believe that you chose Dieppe just by chance, because they meet in Dieppe. Now, Dieppe is not just any place along the Atlantic coastline. Dieppe is a site of a battle. Dieppe is in fact, a very symbolic battle, because it is the last time the Wehrmacht scored a victory in the Western Front, and it is the last defeat for the Allies, right? After that is victory. All right. First thing, why Dieppe, and what is the symbolism of Dieppe, if any? Second thing, which might sound a bit more personal and more sort of transcends the borders of the movie itself. Many years ago, I remember you said that the Anglo-Americans had colonized our mind or our brain.
Subconscious,
it's subconscious, exactly. Have they colonized your subconscious as a filmmaker? So the two questions are very different. Huh?
Yeah, the second one is easy to say. They haven't. I got hold of it again myself, of my subconscious. But the first question, you're right. It looks like the film was written to begin in Dieppe with the German bunker on the beach, and James saying, that's why I came, because I wanted to see this sacrifice. It's almost like a pilgrimage he makes to see this place. But I tell you, we found this bunker once we had decided that we were going to shoot in this hotel. And we really looked on the entire Atlantic coast. We looked in Scotland, we looked in Ireland, in Norway, to find a place next to the Atlantic, and then we found this one. And it confirms my belief that places add a lot to a movie. And the place, the Atlantic coast near Dieppe, gave us this unbelievable present, which was this location that made sense for James, that he wanted to go there. And we were so happy, James and I, when we realized we finally closed a hole in the script. Why is he there? And it was the place that answered it. So you could say we planned it like this from the beginning, but we had not. it is a big, how should I say, gift from that particular place, the Normandy, and that beach where indeed 5,000 Canadians were killed and nobody made it to the beach alive yet. Thank you.
Sí, aquí una pregunta para Wim Wenders. Me gustaría preguntarle si de alguna manera sus personajes representan... Ah, perdón. Me gustaría preguntarle si de alguna manera sus personajes representan a una Europa acomodada que mira para sí misma y no ve que lo que pasa en otro continente puede afectarle. ¿Y cómo cree que la sociedad europea actúa en este aspecto? Ya Alicia Vikander hablaba antes de papeles femeninos. Ha hecho esta película en la que es una científica, pero la vamos a ver en Lara Croft. No sé si cree que pertenece a una generación de actrices que tiene la posibilidad, también por los avances en igualdad, de hacer papeles mucho más diversos que otras generaciones de actrices. Gracias.
It is indeed a little sorry that Europe over the last few years has been so egocentrical, because by definition, and if you look at the history of Europe, Europe has really been a little bit, in many ways, very, very open to the world. And it's only recently that we're closing borders again, which is culturally a catastrophe, I feel, and a shame for this beautiful continent. And I hope that the film helps a little bit to make people aware of the fact that this planet is one place and not a protected place called Europe, and everybody else can see how they can handle the rest of it. So I hope that is one of the things the film opens a little bit, a door to, for instance, Africa, or to the oceans. The oceans is an important part of this planet, and the way we're destroying the oceans at this moment is a scandal, and Europe is behaving just as scandalous as everybody else. Thank you.
And can you repeat the question in English? Maybe just if you... I'm still, you know, young and in the beginning of my career, in the sense that I've done this, well, maybe an English-speaking film, I've worked for 6 years, and I must say that I feel like it has been a difference since I started. I mean, I remember when Hunger Games came out and you saw a female actress took center stage and proved not, you know, only that it could be a good film, but that it could be as big of a commercial success. And I think since the last few years, it's the awareness of the disbalance has really made people think differently and maybe, you know, open their eyes and open up possibilities for opportunities for everyone. And so I think, you know, it's baby steps, but I've, like with all of these, you know, big subjects, I'm positive, and if you are that, I think there is progress. So I hope that it's just going to continue. Yes.
And if you look at the range of parts that Alicia has played, I think I saw all of them. I don't think that there was any generation before that was given this chance.
Good afternoon, Ms. Vikander and Mr. Wenders. Daniel Revola for APT de Cine. I have a question for both Alicia and Wim. Do you feel a particular pressure concerning press reviews being the inaugural film in such an important festival in San Sebastian Film Festival. Thanks.
Should I start?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, I'll start. I think, you know, it's interesting. I sat this morning and had a discussion with a friend about how, you know, nowadays we live in a world where information is flooding around us constantly. And it's very much a one-way communication. And it's a lot of about, you know, expressing your opinions, which I think is a great thing. And I think as long as you are articulate, you know, and have proper criticism, both good and bad, I think everyone should be able to say exactly what they want. And when it comes to making films, I think the truth is always just to make film or stories or work with people that you believe in. And that is what I'm going to continue to do, hopefully, throughout my career.
As for me, there's a little pressure on being an opening film. I've been in lots of festivals. I know that the opening film has a special attention. So it could be a certain pressure, but not for me, because, and now you might be disappointed because you write reviews and you think I'm going to read them. I have long given up reading both the good and the bad, because the good make you feel too good about yourself, and they make you feel, oh, you're so great, and the bad make you feel like shit. And I think it's best not to feel either one. So I have made up my mind, and I'm not reading good and bad. So whatever they write, and so the pressure of the opening film doesn't really concern me. And I beg your pardon that that I'm not reading, but I had to make that choice at one point in my life, and I said, rather not. I read reviews of other movies. But mine, I asked my wife, is it good or is it bad?
Hi. My question is for the actors. I would like to know, what dragged you into this project? Why do you choose this movie above whatever else you're getting?
For me, I grew up with, my mom is a stage actress, and I was very lucky to get introduced to the world of cinema at quite a young age, and mostly because, you know, she loved theater and she loved films, and she made me watch Wings of Desire and Paris, Texas when I was probably like 10. I'm a huge fan of this man sitting next to me. And for me to, you know, be able to meet him
and
yes. Oh, you haven't met her yet? Oh, well, yeah, definitely. I saw Pina. I've seen several of his documentaries. We talked a lot about dance the first time we met. And I think it was just a very good connection for me. The people that I choose to work with, I think I've realized over the last few years, is really what draws me the most sometimes to it. And of course, the vision that the film director kind of shares with you when you meet and discuss the project. So for me, that was together with a really wonderful and strong book that Jonathan had written that made me want to be part of this film.
I mean, I would have come and done the laundry on this film. You know, it was. You get an email from your agent that says Wim Wenders at the top, and you just go back and say yes, yes, anything. You know, so that was easy. He had me at hello, and then you get this amazing opportunity to say Wim wants to Skype with you, and you think, oh, okay, I'm going to Skype with Wim Wenders. That happens every day of my life. That's so easy. And we had a good talk. You said the only thing memory you had of Wales was on a journey back in the 70s where you really need to go to the toilet. On the way back from Wales, you pulled over and you went to the toilet on the side of the road, and there was a silhouette of Stonehenge right there in the night.
I peed at Stonehenge.
Yeah. And I said, that's amazing, Wim. I have the same story. So we bonded on that. But that, you know, Wim is amazing. And then it says, you could go and play Alicia, the opposite Alicia, and you think, yes, 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 that'd be the most fantastic thing. I'm going to learn something. I get to play a character who sort of loves her in a different way that James loves her. Loves her like a big
brother. You say that with a certain regret?
No.
Okay.
Hey, listen, Mae West said, you know, if you're not typecast, you're not working. And but this movie kind of, Wim's a brilliant, amazing artist. And it is, as a gentleman said earlier, thank you for Wim. Alicia, working opposite you was incredible because you, every moment she lives, you know, every moment, everything you're saying is affecting her, whether the camera is on or off, so.
You were our rock. I think you can sense that, all of this.
No, it was one of the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful moments. And what I love about this film is that it is about the light and the darkness. You know, that we can relate to, sometimes the bravest thing any of us could do is fall in love. So the breaking of the human spirit is kind of the last thing to go. So as James is in the darkness looking for the light, being her, Danny is about to go into the darkness and find the light, but she can't, the connected tissue between them. And I saw the film for the first time in Toronto last week. I was very moved by it because we can be astounded by all the stuff in Africa and we could be absolutely, you know, blown away by the science of this, which is, you know, this is the grand casino. These scientists are really betting on red or black, because if they get it wrong, hey, maybe it's like opening a festival, Wim, you know, if we get it wrong, you know, there's a backlash for these scientists. They build towards that. But it was the falling in love that kind of moved me, when James holds Alicia's face and Alicia looks at him and thinks, I'm going to fall in love for the first time. That was an extraordinary cinematic and storytelling moment. So it's a long answer. I had a great time. Mm-hmm. I love San Sebastian. I love this guy. And Alicia is just an absolute wizard. So, yeah. You give yourself over to the process, and it's not bad people to give yourself over to. Thank you.
Hola, buenas tardes. Estoy aquí. Es una pregunta para Wim Wenders. Es sobre la mirada de la pobreza. Hay un diálogo que le dice James McAvoy, ¿has visto alguna vez a un pobre? Y en el cine todo es una cuestión de miradas. Y yo me pregunto qué pensarán los africanos de esta película. ¿Para quién hace la película? ¿Para el mundo rico? ¿Y qué piensa que los africanos, un espectador africano, puede pensar de la película? Gracias.
I'd be really glad to show it in Djibouti. The only problem being they have no more cinemas. Seriously, there was no cinema in this country. So I've worked in Africa before and I shot in Africa before, and it's a place that moves me very, very much, and the people move me very much. And you're totally right to ask the question, who are you making the film for? Because in terms of distribution, only very, very few of our films ever make it there. And I think I've, in my mind, already made that choice that I was going to take the film there and make sure that some of the people can see it. And but it's overall, of course, a question also, what is film distribution today? And are European films, because this is a European co-production. And as such, already it doesn't travel as much as other movies do. And yep, that line is tough when James asks her, do you really know any poor person? Because he does. And I think it's a good question to ask anybody. Do you know any poor people? And it remains a little bit open, the question there. And I think it's good that it remains open, because it's a question that should remain open in all our lives, because we're all not part of that part of humanity that could be called poor. Thank you. We had a fabulous actor on the crew, Hakim Shady, who plays the Al-Qaeda commander. He was born in Somalia. He lived there until the age of 8 or 9. Then he had to flee. He was a refugee. He has a big scar on his face, which he got as a kid. He lived in... Over a game of football. He knew these Al-Shabaab people from direct contact. He had to hide from them. He had to run away from them. He lived in Kenya in refugee camps for 12 years of his life before a welfare organization took him to America, where he's now living. The hardest thing, and I'm eternally grateful to our Spanish co-producer, Juan, can you just get up? Juan Gordon, our Spanish producer. Because they made the impossible possible. There was the perfect man to play this Somalian in the movie. And he was from Somali. He knew what he was talking about. And he was a refugee in America and couldn't travel. And the Spanish production really made, with the Spanish embassy, made the impossible possible. They got him here. He could play the part. And then could buy home. But until by now, he has a green card and he can travel. At the time, he only had a refugee status and made it to this amazing shoot here in Spain and back home. And he knew what we were talking about, especially on the subject of poverty. And he was my most important advisor on the film, on everything that concerned the Somalians, concerned the Al-Shabaab fighters. I had to ask him because he knew firsthand. So he was really great, and he was proud to be in Toronto, and he gave his first interviews, and he was amazing.
He said that he had to pinch himself, that he'd come so far, and we had breakfast, we went out at a big dirty Canadian breakfast together, you know, where you pour everything covered in syrup, and he sort of said that he wanted to use some of the money to build a well in the village that he came from in Mogadishu, which I thought was a very moving thing. But at the same time, he said, I have to pinch myself for the distance that I've traveled. And I suppose all of us feel like we've traveled a distance. We've traveled a long way. But when you meet someone like Hakim, you think, we've just made one step. They've flown to the moon in the distance they've traveled. And all that context, all that history, all that relationship, all that help, on top of that, he's really good in the movie. He's really, really great performance. So
I'm going to hire you as my PR agent.
No. I only speak the truth.
Yeah. Thank you, Cal.
Alicia Vikander, es usted tan natural que me gustaría preguntarle si lo de la oscarizada actriz le suena natural cuando lo oye. Y también, volviendo al personaje y a lo que contaba antes, si aprobaba las matemáticas.
Can I tell you something? Well, when it comes to math, well, I was history, actually, and then math was probably my favorite subject. I tried to get into theater school, and I didn't get in. And thank God, I thought I had done extra math at after I finished school, because I thought I was going to go into law school. So yeah, I did manage to get all my final math degrees, and I got into school. But then I got another shot at acting and gave him, thank God.
You could have become a mathematician.
Not a mathematician. I only did that to pass to get into university. But no, I really enjoyed maths. I actually thought it told a lot of stories, interestingly enough. But Oscar-winning actress, yes, it feels still very new to me to hear those words. And I grew up in small town in Sweden, and I used to watch the Oscars at 2 a.m. in the morning with my mum every year, and that was almost also what he talked about. It was just a window into a very different universe that wasn't really something that was close to the world I lived in. So it was pretty surreal journey, especially when I got to experience it with my parents and my family being there.
Hi, good afternoon, Mrs. Vikander, a question for you. Before, Mr. Rendell said that the biggest challenge for him in this film was to film the relationship between your character and James McAvoy's. And my question is, what was the biggest challenge for you in this film? And the question that I think is for Mr. Letgrand, I think this is a question for you. Why James McAvoy's character does not use the GPS device that's in his teeth before, for God's sake?
I think the biggest challenge that was getting into the head of a scientist, because I didn't have any experience myself of that world. So those days on the boat that we had and the meetings with the women that I met was really, really the essence of me trying to be able to build this character truthfully. And I thought it was, you know, it's interesting to meet people who kind of, they sometimes, in a very natural way, she could describe things that I stood, you know, in the back of the room. I was like, I got about 5% of it. But what I loved was that it was just her language. It was her truth and her belief and her entire universe and something that she, that was so natural to her. So that was something that I wanted to get into the movie, that it's not about, you know, it was a lot of factual, words and descriptions that I had to come across, but I wanted it to really feel as natural as it did when I met these scientists.
I think it's important to put a little bit of context on James's character and where we've come. When I was writing the novel, I was an Africa correspondent for The Economist magazine in London, and I was a terrorism correspondent. So I was very lucky at the time to actually go into Somalia and sit down with Al-Qaeda commanders myself. And I knew, obviously, a lot of intelligence officers, including Spanish intelligence officers, French. There was a French spy who was kidnapped in exactly the same way that James was kidnapped. The brutal fact is, today, we wouldn't have a film, we wouldn't have a novel, because James would have his head cut off in the first minute. The world we're living in now, in terms of terrorism, is a lot more brutal and violent. You would not have those conversations, you'd never have that interaction now. That's gone. So, in a way, the film is almost nostalgic for... where we are now is terribly brutal. I'm not quite sure what you mean about the GPS device. Look, this is not Jason Bourne, right? It's certainly not James Bond. It's the real grungy end of the reality. I mean, maybe, I think, in the novel as well, he's a little bit incompetent, to be honest. But that's the reality, right? You have incompetent spies as well. But the important thing, if you're going to remember him and Danny, is a sense of duty, a sense of purpose, a sense of striving, and he probably could have made different decisions. Though, of course, now we've come full circle, and you would actually send an agent back into Somalia now. British government definitely would do that. They would send a guy in to stop a bombing in London or in Madrid or wherever. But one would hope that maybe... Vim, he had this idea of a tooth device. What was the thing with the tooth?
Well, he activates it only when he's come to the end of the mission. And as his colleagues tell him in the beginning, we can't get you out of there. Once you're in there, we can't get you out. And so he only activates it in the very end when he realizes they're next to the American army base. And if he doesn't activate it now, much more damage might be done. So it's almost a suicidal act. It is a suicide at the end. When he activates the thing, it's also his own. It's also his own death sentence, so to speak. So, but as a tool, it was a little bit of a James Bondish, and yes, and it felt more real when he's in the museum talking with his colleagues, and they tell him, "You take this thing with you, but be aware that once you're in there, we can't get you out of there. You can just let us know where you are, but we cannot really save you." And they don't save him in the end; they just bomb, and he's one of the victims. Thank you.
Una última pregunta, lo siento.
Brazil again, Mr. Wenders. You have a long and intimate relation with documentaries throughout your career. After working so many times with documentaries, how does this affect the way you deal with fiction, especially with realism in a film like Submergence?
I never understand the distinction between documentary and fiction, because some fiction only becomes real if you allow reality to flow in, and there is a lot of reality came into our story, into our fictional story, like the beach in Dieppe and the bunker there, but a lot of the reality in Africa just came in on its own, like the salt lake. For instance, you shoot on a salt lake, it's like you're shooting a documentary on a salt lake. It's not much of a difference. And reality, I think, in a fiction is as necessary as anything, because if you don't have any reality coming in, if you just fabricate it all, it's fantasy. And this story that Jonathan wrote is not fantasy, it is too much based on real things. So, and on the other hand, the documentaries can be very fictitious. I mean, I made Buena Vista Social Club thinking I was doing a music documentary, and in the end, I realized I had happened to be there when a real fairy tale had happened, and I documented a fairy tale. These old men became like the Beatles, and I just was lucky to be there, but it was really a fairy tale. So the distinction between documentary and fiction is completely overrated.
Thank you very, very much, all of you. Muchísimas gracias a todos.